Hello, and welcome to the fifth episode in this series of podcasts focusing on the competition rules around patent settlement agreements brought to you by Bristow's. My name is Pat Tracy, and I'm the head of the competition team here at Bristow's. And in this podcast, you just have me. And I'm going briefly to summarise how competition law approaches no challenge clauses in patent settlement agreements. So this is a fairly short episode. Just to be clear before we start, no challenge clauses are any direct or indirect obligation not to challenge the validity of intellectual property rights. And this would usually relate in a pharma context to the originator's intellectual property. And they are, of course, very important features of patent settlement agreements, because to prevent the settlement being entirely pointless, the alleged infringer agrees as a term of the settlement not to challenge the validity of the patents at issue in the future. But despite the importance of no challenge clauses in supporting settlement agreements, they can give rise to competition concerns, even in a settlement context. In quite an old case, the EU Court of Justice, the case was Bayer and Sulhofer, held that the fact that a no challenge provision comes up in the context of a settlement agreement, rather than in some other form of, say, commercial license, doesn't stop it from being regarded as anti-competitive. More recently, while acknowledging the comments of the court in Bayer, the EU Commission's tech transfer guidelines acknowledge that settlements can, of course, be beneficial to the public and create efficiencies by saving scarce resources. And in that context, the Commission notes that no challenge provisions which are necessary to achieve that pro-competitive and beneficial outcome may be acceptable under the competition rules. But even in that context, the Commission also repeats the view expressed by the Court of Justice in, for example, the windsurfing case, that it is in the public interest to get rid of invalid IP rights because they can act as, in the words of the court, an unmerited barrier to innovation and economic activity. So seeing no challenge provisions through that prism of the public interest in removing invalid patent rights explains the hostile approach of the Commission and EU competition law more generally to no challenge provisions. And you have to bear that in mind when you're thinking about it in the context of settlement agreements. As mentioned earlier, however, in the context of pro-competitive settlements, no challenge obligations can be acceptable. And the key is to ensure that they are necessary to conclude the settlement and to make it effective. In practice, that means that great care is needed when negotiating and drafting no challenge provisions, even in the context of settlements. For example, a no challenge clause that extends beyond the scope of the patents in issue in the litigation being settled might be a cause for concern unless its breadth can be explained by reference to what is objectively necessary to settle the dispute. Another example might be the inclusion of a no-challenge clause in a settlement agreement, which provides for a value transfer from the patentee to the generic manufacturer, because such an inclusion is one aspect of the agreement that could attract scrutiny, because it adds to a suspicion that one of the purposes of the agreement is actually to shield potentially invalid intellectual property rights from judicial scrutiny. And if that is the case, it would enhance and exacerbate the impact of any market sharing effects of the settlement agreement itself. The Commission remarks in its technology transfer guidelines that a no challenge clause is particularly likely to infringe competition law where the IP right that is being shielded from challenge was granted following the provision of incorrect or misleading information to the relevant patent authorities. So, for example, where there is a real suspicion that the patentee is aware of the likely or definite invalidity of the underlying right. This is a reference back to a case from around 10 years ago, where AstraZeneca was fined by the European Commission for abusing a dominant position on the market for proton pump inhibitors, so-called PPIs. The Commission held that this abuse had occurred because AZ was said to have misled patent authorities so as to obtain an SPC, which could chill or prevent generic competition against its anti-ulcer medicine, Losec, in certain markets. And that finding of abuse was upheld both by the General Court and then the Court of Justice. And when you think about it, it's not really surprising that an obligation not to challenge patents granted on a misleading basis should be regarded as problematic, given that such an activity would result in bolstering a barrier to entry that should not, objectively, have existed in the first place. But just returning to more recent case law and to no challenge provisions, particularly in settlement agreements, in Lundbeck, the parties argued that a settlement agreement that didn't include a no challenge provision couldn't be regarded as an agreement which would restrict competition by object, presumably on the basis that the blocking IP could be challenged and the underlying barrier to entry could be removed. Now, the importance of the distinction between a restriction of competition by object or by effect was discussed in the previous episode of this podcast series. And you'll remember that if an agreement restricts competition by object, then there's no need for the competition authority or to show evidence of concrete effect on competition in order to establish a breach of competition law. So this was an important argument. And if it had succeeded, it might significantly have affected the approach to no challenge provisions when drafting settlements. However, in Lundbeck, the Advocate General of the Court concluded that even if an agreement does not conclude an explicit no challenge clause, it may still restrict competition by object. And this was on the basis that because a generic company which receives a reverse payment from a patentee on a settlement agreement is unlikely to have an incentive to challenge the patent in issue in any event. And that conclusion of the Advocate General is a good demonstration of the fact that context can matter just as much as formal language in competition law. It'll be interesting to see whether the Court of Justice adds any further gloss to this when it gives judgment in Lundbeck later in March. Finally, I'd like to say a few words about other obligations around IP in the context of settlements. What about an obligation not to seek a declaration of non-infringement? Well, again, this will depend on the context. If the settlement results in a walkaway or some transaction that doesn't constitute a reverse payment situation, and if the obligation not to seek a DNI goes no further than is objectively necessary to settle the dispute, then an obligation not to start it up again by seeking a declaration of non-infringement may well be acceptable, and indeed might not fall within the scope of the prohibition in Article 101 of the treaty at all. In other contexts, however, such a prohibition, even without a broader no-challenge clause, might be seen as a clear potential infringement of the competition rules. And this might be the case, for example, if a process patent was the main IP at issue, where the core of the dispute relates to infringement or otherwise, and the agreement appears to go beyond what is in fact a true settlement. So just to summarise, limitations on challenges to IP that might enhance the potential for those rights to affect the ability to enter a market, and where there's uncertainty about the scope or validity of those rights, will be closely scrutinised from a competition law perspective. In the context of a settlement agreement, no challenge provisions that go further than is necessary to give effect to a true settlement will give rise to risk. If they are contained in an agreement that itself contains inducements not to enter, a no challenge clause will exacerbate the situation. But in such circumstances, even if there is not an absolute or explicit no challenge clause, this will not save the agreement from potentially falling into the category of object restrictions of competition. That's all I had to say for this episode, and thank you for listening. The next instalment is going to be hosted by Sophie and Olivia, who will be discussing some of the pro-competitive effects associated with patent settlement agreements. So perhaps a little bit more good news in the next podcast.